And we pray this in your name. Amen. Amen. Hey everybody, my name is Stevie B, and I'm a grateful believer and also a recovering alcoholic and a member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
And it's so good to be here with you guys tonight. And I appreciate you guys standing up in the back. And I wish there was more chairs. Does anybody have a chair? Is there one chair in the house that someone could raise a hand? Well, you know, for the last how many weeks we've been here, I've been saying that I'm a member of the West Side Men's Group. And you guys, whoever chooses to, says nice. And I want to tell you that just to show you how nice it is to be a member of a group where we travel together to support each other's message, I just want to show you something. If everybody that's in the West Side Men's Group, and Rhonda, if you guys would just raise your hand so that you guys would see how many of us are in this meeting tonight. So you can imagine that there's over 40, maybe 40, 45 plus hands raised. And, hey John. And so when we say that we're a part of the West Side Men's Group and it's nice, the reason is because it's such a great group to belong to if you're a man. It's such a great group to belong to. We really, really have God as our center of our home group, and among a bunch of men, that's rare. Before this meeting starts, for the last so many weeks, we go out to the circle into the parking lot, and we hold hands as men, and we pray together collectively, not religiously. It has nothing to do with religion. We pray collectively to God to bless this room before I speak, and also to bless our sobrieties. A group of men from all different religious backgrounds, all different religious biases, all different non-religious backgrounds, we get together in a circle and we do the third step prayer out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous found on page 63. And we ask God to show up before we ever step into the room. So if you don't think that that's a special type of home group, I want to tell you that it is. So good to see my friends over here from the Bible study. And Jenny's about to have a baby any day now, any moment now. And Daddy's here, Daddy Jimmy's here, and her best friend is here. And I want to tell you that the 12th step that we're going to be talking about tonight, the direct result of the 12th step is this young lady and her husband and her baby and her best friend all be sitting here as a direct result of the 12th step and what God did in my life and how I carried that message on into her life and how she continues to carry that message on to her sponsees' lives. Tonight we have exactly 35 minutes, 40 minutes to cover everything that I ever wanted to say in the last 12 weeks and I didn't get to say. And it's hard for me after Owen, the way he just was, and I just want to say thank you to the 12-step group for allowing me to come up here and blessing me with the privilege of being able to serve here doing the 12-step for the last how many weeks we were here. There's nothing greater of a blessing, so to be asked to do this and then to be given a gift to do it is very similar to how we are in the program. We come in completely broken. We're miserable, we're using, we're at a place in our lives where we can't do it. We don't know if we believe in God. All we know is that we can't do this. We come in, God blesses us with all these blessings, and then at the end of the year, we pick up medallions and people cheer for us. It's almost bizarre how the program works. And that's how it is to be thanked to do the 12 steps of the 12 steps. To do the greatest gift that possible is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. A lot of people make a lot of big deal about the wording in this 12th step. They concentrate as the result of these steps. You know, they get really, really, as the result of these. I want to tell you, as the results, as a result, the step says as the results. But I'm going to tell you what's happened in my life. as the results of working these 12 steps, and as the result of actually giving my life over to the care of God in the third step. And I don't mean giving a piece of my life over to the care of God. I mean I gave my life over to the care of God. And then the next line is, as I understood him. Last week we spoke about something, and a lot of people aren't here from last week, so I'm going to just reiterate, is that there's nowhere in the step, in the 11th step, that says, a God of our understanding. Nowhere in the 11th step says, a God of our understanding. Having had a spiritual awakening as a God of our understanding. Or last week when we were speaking, I sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a God of our understanding. That's nowhere in there. We're talking about God as you understand him. Now, wherever you're at with your relationship with God, you're at your relationship with God, and I'm not going to tell you how to have that relationship, but I am going to tell you that there is one God, and he's already there. So you don't have to recreate him. He's already there. Get past that part. Now, how you want to get closer to him is how you're going to do that in your program. But going along the path and recreating him as you get to each step is just going to get you confused. God is, he's already there. The founding fathers of the big book believed in that. It's all over the 12 steps, and it's all over the big book in the 12 and 12. There's nowhere in there that says they didn't believe in it. What they are saying is that you don't have to believe the way that they believed. And you certainly don't have to believe the way that I believe. But it will definitely help you to believe in God as you understand him. And once you get to that place, and already two people have walked out, already just the mention of God, the mere mention of God, the big book says we will bristle with antagonism. Just the mere mention of the Creator, we will bristle with antagonism. You know what bristling with antagonism means? Walk out. You know what it means? Listen, bristle with antagonism means you've already folded your arms in front of you and you're like, I can't believe I actually sat through this to get to this place. Bristling with antagonism means as soon as somebody says to you about God, you've already shut him off. The big book says that there's nothing so detrimental to our spiritual growth as being closed-minded. That we need to be open-minded. We need to be honest, and we need to be willing. And if you can't do that, if you can't grasp the basic facts that you are not God and he is, that you created the mess and he's going to fix it. If you're so grandiose to the fact that you might think you created this in another life, you know, maybe you believe in reincarnation, and I'm not putting that down, but you might think that you created this universe in another life, then you will continue to try to figure out the universe on your own. Well, let me tell you what happened to me. My last sobriety, I did this thing called, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of Steve working some type of steps, and I was working the steps, and I stayed sober 7 years. And I gave God two things in my program. I gave him two things. The first thing I gave him was my alcohol. And the second thing I gave him was my drugs. And then I kept everything else. I kept my lust, and I kept my lies, and I kept my violence, and I kept my profanity, and I kept it all in a box. And the box, depending on who I was around, I opened up the box at different times. So if I was standing in the parking lot in my last sobriety with a bunch of guys, I would take out my profanity box. Did you see that? That type of box. And then if my wife or someone else was walking by, close that book. Hi, how are you? Good to see you. Kind of like Tom Sawyer when he was doing the fence over in Huckleberry Finn. You know, I was like, oh, everything's good. That was that box that I had in there. In this sobriety, what I've done is this. I give God everything. And I need to give him everything because I make so many mistakes. I'm not looking to hold back anything. I'm not looking to recreate the big book. I'm not looking to recreate any NA text, the Bible, nothing. In the 12th step, right before we start, it says faith without works is dead. There's a lot of people in here that claim faith and they're not doing anything about it. And maybe not in this specific room. But there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that claim faith and they have no works. The Bible says, which is where they got this from, faith without works is dead, that if you don't have works, where's your faith? And that's the whole thing that the 12 step is. You going around saying that you've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, and you're not taking meetings in the treatment centers, you're not starting meetings, you're not sponsoring people, you're not speaking from the podium, you're not picking up coffee cups, you're not going around, you're walking out of meetings if there's uncomfortable seating situation, you're walking out of meetings if someone says something that you don't like, you're not working this 12 step. That means your faith without works is what? Dead. The big book also says, in another place that talks about death, for us to drink is to die. You know, when the big book talks about death, it's probably usually something that's serious. They don't just use words like death all over the big book. But when they use death, it's serious. And this is where they talk about that faith without works is dead. You don't want to go across town to pick the guy up in your car? You got to do it. You don't want to go over there and speak at a meeting when there's only good... Listen, let me tell you something. I speak at big meetings because of the West Side Men's Group. We all travel together. We need to have a big room. There's 45 people. We all travel together. A couple weeks ago, a month ago, someone asked me to go speak at a place called the Chrysalis Center. Now, I didn't know what the Chrysalis Center was, and I was hoping it had a microphone and a big podium and all that. But something inside me and my spirit told me, maybe there's not going to be a big microphone at the Chrysalis Center. Especially it was a 10 a.m. meeting. It was off where I work, right around the swap shop. And But I said to Sandy, I said to my beautiful wife, I said, sweetheart, I'm going to speak over there at the Chrysalis Center. There was four people in the meeting, one of which was on the cell phone the entire meeting. So it's me, this wonderful servant of God named Karen that's taking the meeting into the Chrysalis Center every 2 weeks. Two other people that are not nodding out. There's one person that's nodding out, and then there's another person that's on the cell phone. What I mean by on the cell phone, I mean like I'm speaking, and the person's going like this. Yeah, and then the guy said this. I mean, he's actually on the cell phone while I'm speaking. Now, doesn't matter. Because something that Russell taught me from my first meeting that I ever met him, it's about the one. Not about the room. It's about the one. And that night when I was at the West Dixie Club 9.5 years ago and I saw Russell speaking and he did something that I knew he was going to get thrown out of AA for, he opened up the Bible. Now, I had never seen that. I mean, I've been in AA a long time before that. I knew that was about to get him barred from AA. I mean, I knew that was going to be a big deal. And I knew that sooner the AA police was going to come, and that was it. Russell was gone. Where he would have to go for meetings, I'm not sure, but it wouldn't be in that place. They weren't going to ask him to come back. And I was with my dad that's sitting here in the front row. And I was sober a couple hours. I had just smoked crack the day before. It was January 2nd when I relapsed. January 3rd, my dad takes me to a meeting. It happens to be the month that Russell's going to pick up his medallion at the West Dixie Club. And I don't know what the man said. All I know is he opened up the Bible. He said something about God. It was something different than I ever heard before. I couldn't really hear that well because alcohol was leaking out of my ears. But I knew he said something that was different. And I went up to him and I said to my dad, I said, Dad, if I could get that guy to be my sponsor, everything would change. Hoping that, you know, this guy would be so unbelievably busy that he could never take me on as a sponsee. And my dad says to me, why don't you ask him? I said, Dad, you can't just ask people like Russell to be your... I mean, this, you understand, this is... Now, you know what's amazing to me is that people can actually think that you can get an ego from speaking from the podium in AA. Like, this is the United Nations. But you understand something. Although my parents are extremely proud of me, if they had a choice between me being the main speaker at the 12-step house or actually finishing my degree at college and really catapulting myself into, like, stardom, you understand what I'm saying? So to get a big head in AA is kind of a little bit weird. It's a little bit weird. We're in AA. I don't know if anybody told you that. So Russell's in AA, and he's speaking, and I'm like, Dad, you can't just ask Russell. This is like Russell. Now, I only seen him that night, you know. So I asked him, and he's walking out all by himself, just like a regular guy, into his regular car. And I said, Russell, would you be my sponsor? And he says, sure. Here's my number. Call me tomorrow. It was like just that simple. And Russell, the next day when I went down, now when I asked him to be my sponsor, I didn't know he lived like 5 miles north of Cuba. I mean, I didn't understand that. We were in West Dixie, which is only 35 minutes. It turns out he lives in Cutler Ridge, which you need a passport to get to. I didn't know that. But he said, listen to me, are you willing to go to any length? I said, absolutely. He said, then meet me tomorrow morning at this restaurant in Cutler. You've been down there, Frankie. I mean, it's like unbelievable. So I'm driving, I'm in a rental car. I'm in a rental car that you have to pay per mile in. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. I get down there, and Russell, and I said to Russell something about, and he said, Steve, let me tell you something. Last night meeting was about the one. Maybe that could be you. You could be the one. Now, for a guy that has no self-esteem, for a guy that just had 7 years of sobriety, relapsed, destroyed his family, his wife has a restraining order against him, his parents took his wife to get divorce papers drawn up, I'm living in a halfway house, I have no vehicle except the rented one that I'm in, I only have one bag of clothes and it comes in a Winn-Dixie, not in like a Louis Vuitton, I had a Winn-Dixie plastic bag. And the guy tells me, Russell says to me, you could be the one. There was a glimmer of hope in my heart. And I wanted to be that one. And through the series of events, and then meeting Mason the next week, Mason came into the halfway house. We initially didn't get along immediately. Kind of like two Rottweilers in a very, very small cage. But then we became the bestest of friends. And I told him that I was going down to Miami to see this guy. And Mason was N.A. to the bone. Which means he's like, you know, like one of the... Like, if you even said sober in the halfway house, he was like, it's not sober, it's clean. You know, he was like N.A. to the bone. So, it was a little bit of friction. And I told him, I'm going down to see this guy, Russell. And he was going N.A. to the bone. And he wasn't hearing it. But one night he came with me. And we started following Russell around. And then because there's different gifts in the program... I want you guys to hear something. There's different gifts in the program. Sometimes the greatest speakers are the worst one-on-one people. Okay? Not everybody can have every gift. God talks about giving your talents. Your talents could be time, your talents could be money, or your talents could be your treasures, and it could be another gift. That doesn't mean that I'm the greatest one-on-one sponsor. And Russell certainly was too busy to be the greatest one-on-one step sponsor. But he was the greatest one-on-one mentor. And although I never physically worked a step with Russell on paper, I followed him around for the next year and then a year and a half and 2 years, and I watched him work the steps, and I learned about working the steps by watching him. Not every sponsor is the perfect take you through the doctor's opinion, take you through step one, step two. Now, I'm not saying you don't need that. I got another man for that. Because this is my program. I know what I need. And if I'm not getting what I need, I go to where I'm in need. When I was doing super alcohol, if I was getting the cut stuff, I went to another person. If I was going to a bar and they had some type of watered down liquor, I went to another bar. So when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, if my sponsor is not everything that I want him to be, but I love the guy and he is almost everything I want him to be, I went and got another sponsor. Together, Russell and Jerry Bear changed my life. Jerry Bear was my day-to-day steps Nazi, grounded in, you know, in the book, on your knees. And Russell was a guy that I watched do things that were amazing, and I found out what I wanted to do in life, and I wanted to talk about the 12 steps and about God from the podium. And this was years before I could even take a sober breath. So I get 6 months, I get 9 months, I get a year. You guys know the story. Sandy invites me to come back and live in the house. I go back and live in the house the first night. I turn over the mattress in the house when I'm there my first night, and there it turns out to be my stash that I had hid in a blackout. John, what's the problem? I mean, that's one of the best stories right there. Half measures of Elvis, nothing, you know what I'm saying? So I turn the mattress over. I'm in the house the first night. My wife is cooking downstairs. She's an amazing breakfast cook, and she was making coffee, and I just moved out of the house from Mason, and I turn over, and there's my drugs. My super alcohol underneath the pillow. Not underneath the pillow. Underneath the mattress that I had hid in a blackout, and I had just gotten up off my knees, and for the first time in my life, it wasn't Steve and the drugs. It was Steve and God and the drugs. And I called my wife, and she's crying, and I'm crying, and we flush the stuff down the toilet, and we throw the stuff in garbage bags. And I start on this road, and I call Russell. And I know this is going to affect some of you, and you're going to be all upset, but this is not what I'm saying that you need to do. This is what I did. This is my story. The book says our personal stories disclose on how we developed a personal relationship with God. This is my story. You do it how you want to do it. I call up Russell from Barnes & Noble, and I say, Russell, you brought a big book out of the meeting. Well, back when I first came in, a Bible. You brought a Bible out in the meeting when I first came in. Where do you get a Bible from? Now, I had seen Bibles in my parents' house when I was a kid. It was in the bathroom. I used to read the Bible. And I had seen Bibles in hotel rooms when I used to hide my stuff in the Bible to think the police were outside. But I had never actually owned a Bible until I actually opened it up and do something with the Bible. So I didn't know that you can where to get it from. And I didn't belong to a church. So I call up Russell, and I'm in Barnes & Noble. And the funny thing about my sponsor is he's always laughs at times where I think it's very inappropriate. He has a gift of laughing at inappropriate times. So I say to him, where do you buy a Bible? And I hear him on the other land, and he goes like, I hear him, and he goes, Woody, listen to this. One of my guys, what's in the word, buy a Bible? I didn't think that was very funny. Anyway, I buy a Bible. Fast forward the story. I'm in my psychiatrist's office. And the reason I need to tell you this is I need to let you know this. I'm not pro-drugs, I'm not anti-drugs, I'm not pro-getting off them, and I'm not pro-getting on them. But this is my story. If you sat here doing where I told you that in my fourth year of sobriety, my first time around, that I got arrested for picking up a prostitute while I was dating my then beautiful girlfriend that turned out to be my wife 4 years later, you know that I bare my soul up here. I need to just tell you that when I came into the program this time, they diagnosed me as severe bipolar and then ADD, and I would never be off drugs. And that I needed to take them to even function. And I didn't argue. And I'm in my third year of sobriety, and I just feel that it's time to get off them. I just feel it. And I go and I say to the psychiatrist, I say, Denise, I say, I want to get off it. And she says, well, if you want to get off it, there's a way to get off it, and you taper it off, and then if you go crazy, or if you kill anybody, or you kill yourself, you probably need to be on it. That's basically the way you do it. So, you know, if you kill anybody, kill yourself, or you go crazy. So, it seemed worth a try at the time. And while I'm in her office, I say to her, I say, Denise, there's something in my heart that wants me to go into treatment centers and tell people that there is a relationship with God that'll change your life, and it could be hand in hand with the big book and the NA text, and you don't need to leave the program and join a church to do it. It perfectly goes hand in hand while we're in AA. And I want to tell people about it. People are leaving AA to go to church, and people leaving NA to go to church, and people in church think we're a bunch of heathens in here, and I want to go around telling people that that's not true. Do you think there's a possibility of me being that guy? Now, I'm only 3 years sober, but let me tell you something. You know when they wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? When Bill W. was less than 4 years sober. So when God gives you a vision, when God gives you a dream, it's not for us to question, it's just for us to do it. Having had this spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried this message to other alcoholics and practiced these principles in all our affairs. So I said, listen, this is what I want to do. She said, well, go do it. I didn't expect it to be that easy. I thought she was going to tell me to slow down, maybe my sixth year, my seventh year, my eighth year. She said, go do it. I said, Mason, let's go over to this one treatment center that we knew about that called the Recovery Place or something like that, Recovery Solutions. And let's go and tell them that we want to be that guy. We want to be the guy that takes meetings in there and tells them about God. I want to tell them the story that I gave my life to God. And my relationship with God, obviously, you know, I'm saying church is Jesus Christ. I don't say that from the podium because that's my relationship with Jesus Christ. You need to find your relationship with your God. But my relationship was with Jesus Christ, and I wanted to go tell this treatment center about it. Not that great of an idea. I don't really have that great of credentials. I go up to the lady at the front desk and I tell her, listen, I've given my life to God. And I'm sober. I used to be a really, really bad drug addict and alcoholic. I'm sober. I gave my life to God. Do you think that there's something inside the treatment center that I could do here? And she says, I forget her name. She's, was it?
Nadine.
She says, hold on a moment. And she writes my name down on a piece of paper and she says, we'll get back to you. It's like me and Mason, you know, we're probably in the same clothes we were back then. We have no credentials. Oh, I remember what she said to me. She says, what are your credentials? And I said, well, I love God and I'm sober. She said, well, write your phone number down. We'll get back to you. Now, we never heard back from her. But I go back to the psychiatrist and I do get off that medication by the grace of God, and I'm not pushing anybody to get off medication. And I'm certainly not pushing anything about medication. This is my journey. I get off the medication and she says, you know, I think you would have a great effect on this one young man whose father's a pastor and he can't get sober. And I think you should call him. And I call him, but the kid doesn't call me back. And then because we carry this message in all our affairs, I have a meeting in BARC that I take to on Tuesday mornings. So I go to my BARC meeting. And I give my story the same way I'm giving it over here. And there's a room full of people, most of which are nodding out, falling over their chairs, drooling. But there's like two people that are actually listening. And I always remember what Russell said. It's for the one. Is there anybody in here tonight that was a recipient of my story in BARC? You don't have to raise your hand, but I'm sure there is, because I've done it for 6 years. So that day I leave, and then the kid calls me back that day. And he says, listen, certain affairs, and I got your number and this whole thing. And I go, well, how you doing? You were supposed to call me a month ago. He goes, I'm not doing that great. I'm in BARC. I said, I just spoke there this morning. He said, were you the guy with the glasses? I said, that was me. He says, I really didn't hear the story, but I knew it was good. Now, it turns out at that exact time that his father, who's the pastor, this Michael goes to this treatment center that Mason and I couldn't get into for nothing because we have no credentials. It turns out that the treatment center director wanted to meet his father. And that guy's father wanted me to sponsor his son. And that guy's son was in that treatment center. And then all of a sudden, the director of that treatment center wanted to meet me and wanted to have a breakfast with me. So I'm having breakfast with the guy that didn't want to meet me because God wanted him to meet me. Not because I can do anything, because he can do everything. So I'm having breakfast with the guy, and he goes, well, how did you even find out about that? I said, well, I came to your place a month ago and signed a piece of paper. He's like, oh, well, you know. And then he's like, well, we want you to take a meeting in here on Tuesdays at 7. I said, the only meeting time that I have available is Mondays at 8. He said, I'm sorry, that won't work out. I said, I'm sorry, that's the only time I have. You guys had some type of gym thing you were going to. So that's it. The next day he calls me up and he says, listen, would you like to do a meeting on Monday at 8 o'clock? And there starts the journey of being inside that one treatment center, of meeting my friends that are over here, of seeing them come in. Now they have over 3 years of sobriety. They're starting families. They're starting their own networks of sponsees. I started taking that meeting in there every Monday night with this man right here. We took a meeting in there every Monday night. And sometimes the people in there hated us. I remember this one time this big guy got up and wanted to fight me. He's like, you don't know what you're talking about. I said, I'm going home tonight, are you? Another guy started cursing, four-letter curses at me, just screaming. Kaminsky Stuckey was there that night. Screaming, cursing. I said, listen, that's not the way we behave. And I just stopped him right there. That's not the way we behave. And God kept opening doors, and I got invited to that treatment center and another treatment center and another treatment center. And my wife will tell you, I was speaking 6 days a week with Mason, going all around to these different places. That gentleman opened up another treatment center, and we just continued going on. God put it in our hearts that we wanted to have a meeting separate than AA that would have to do with the Bible and would have to do with the 12 steps. And we started something separate because we don't believe in jamming our beliefs down in an AA meeting. I don't believe in that. I believe in everybody has their path. This is my path. And we started a separate meeting for that. And Jenny was in that meeting too when we started. And there was 6 people. And now on a Wednesday night, God willing, sometimes it's 200 people because Jimmy invited us to go to his church with Brother Owen and all a bunch of these guys. And now sometimes there's 200, sometimes there's 15. But we keep plugging away. We keep plugging away. I've now passed that BARC meeting over to a member of our own home group, our own Joe P. Or I can say his last name because he does, Joe Pashkin. Now, he takes that meetings in on Tuesday mornings. And my sponsee, Doug, that was a complete mess that I first met him. I brought him to that meeting, and he did that meeting for 3 years. Now, why do I tell you all that stuff? Because Kevin, who just called from Virginia last week, I told you the story about Kevin, that after hearing the steps on the website, he came down here and he started his new way of life, and now he's starting meetings up there. Kevin sent me a letter yesterday to remind me of how desperate he was in the beginning, but he heard on Eric's website that we say nice after the West Side Men's Group. So the thing that turns other people's stomachs, because when I went to your meeting on Sunday night, I saw a lot of rolling eyes when we said nice after, not from James, because James is the best, But there was a I said I'm Stevie Bay. I'm from the West Side Men's Group, and then they said nice, and I saw a lot of guys going like this. But because we said nice, that guy Kevin, who listened in on the internet looking for an NA speaker, a Narcotics Anonymous speaker, got our AA tape from this 12-step house, heard you guys say nice. He took a flight down here and got sober at the Cleveland house. And now he's starting meetings, and he's a productive member of society in Virginia. But not only that, he's a dad. And he's a husband. And he's a worker. At work last week, they were trying to give him so much stress for him to stop going to his meetings at night. Even though the guy's only year and a half sober, the management at his car dealership started telling him that he can't take nights because nights is when they make all the money. Kevin said, listen, nights is when I stay alive by going to my meetings. If I can't work here, then I can't work here. That's the way it is. The next day, the new car manager that was giving him trouble was out smoking rocks in somewhere, and he got fired. And the other guy that was giving him trouble, he was out drinking. And Kevin stayed just where he was supposed to, and now he got a raise and still allowed to go to his meetings. You see, what I'm telling you is that you can't do any of this, but he can. You see, the 12-step has everything to do with you have no power, but he does. People get infuriated with me because I'm up here telling you all that God can do. Because listen to this. Because he can. You know what I mean? I'm not looking to impress alcoholics in AA. I'm looking to impress God. If it comes a choice, and listen, I love my home group. My closest friends are here. You know these guys, Mark and Eddie and these guys, and Joe used to, they come down from Boynton Beach, Delray Beach, Boca Raton. It's not easy for them. Ben, all these guys, they come down from very, very far places. Eddie's got 39 years of sobriety? 32 years of sobriety. My friend Marty M. is a full-time practice, and he's a full-time teacher, and he still makes time to come here. We do this because we love each other. But let me tell you something, not only that, because we have to give it away to keep it. And we believe in this stuff. This is not something we do to part-time. This is not something that I only do on Tuesdays. And actually, I have a real hard time with my friends that do AA and 12-step work part-time. You guys that know me personally know I don't do this part-time. It's a little annoying to my wife because my cell phone is always ringing. But listen, I was a drug-smoking, smuggling, couldn't-stay-sober-an-hour type of an alcoholic. And now I'm a guy that hasn't thought about taking a drink in a very, very long time. So if the only thing that I have to do is put full time into serving God, and then I never have to go back to that life, isn't that a small price to pay? Isn't that amazing? I want to tell you about my 16-hour story. It's going to annoy some of you people, and good. It'll be good for work for you. If it annoys you enough, maybe you'll get a sponsor or call your sponsor and then take it to your sponsor and then dump it on him or her. All I'm asking you, or anybody that's asked me to do anything, is to put 16 hours a week. 16 hours a week into my sobriety. And let me tell you how I come up with that numbers. That's 7 meetings a week, 2 hours at the meetings. Because you have or an hour and a half. You know, you have, and Steve, it's not exact math, so stop trying to figure it out. It's a roundabout thing. It's 7 meetings a week. And you spend more, I know it's 14, but you spend a little bit more time, especially after the West Side, because you're standing around, you're talking about stuff. 16 hours a week, let me tell you how I come up with that. I go to a meeting on Mondays. I go to 2 meetings on Tuesdays, one of which I go to with my dad and my guys. We go to a meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then we go to another meeting, Victory, at 8:30, and then I used to take a meeting into Bark, so now Joel has that meeting. On Wednesday night, we have our recovery Bible study that I told you about. On Thursday night, we have our West Side men's group. On Friday night, sometimes I come here and I'm with Owen and Jimmy. It's a blessing. But usually, 90% of the time, I'm on date night with my wife, which is always very special. Saturday mornings, we have a meeting at the Cleveland House called It's All About God AA meeting. And Saturday night, we have the most special meeting for me during the week is the 9th chapter meeting. And that's a meeting that has to do with families. And let me just tell you something. And I'm not saying that you can't recover without a family, because you can. Because AA can become your family, and it always does. But my family, even till this day, see, tonight is family night. And my family is sitting here in a very uncomfortable 400-degree room. My dad's got almost 20 years of sobriety. My mom's retired. They need this like they need a hole in the head. And let me tell you something. And my wife is already with me 6 meetings a week. And there's no place in the world that they would rather be, because this is how we roll. On On Sunday mornings we're at church, and then Sunday night we have another family night when they're down here from New York. And that's how we do it. It's 16 hours a week. 16 hours a week of dedication. Now, when I was going through the meeting list, right? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it sounded like a lot. How many people? Just raise your hands. Did it sound like a lot? It sounds like a lot. But then I get 130-something hours a week to myself. I can do whatever I want. What I mean by myself is this. I'm not a slave to any master. There's nothing that holds the keys to a collar that's around my neck, which is drug addiction and alcoholism. Alcohol used to be my master. It said, go over here to this place, go over here to this place, beg for money at this place, try to get fronted to tomorrow at this place, try to act this way at this place, try to act sober at this place. I don't have to try to do any of that today. And all it is 16 hours of dedication, some service. Of course, my guys that I sponsor that are in the room, they'll tell you that I'm not the greatest. Ray, new guy, I want to tell you I'm not the greatest in terms of one-on-one and working the steps during the week. But I'm the greatest on how I just pour love on you at any time of the day or night. Because that's what was done with me. And I follow great men that a lot of them are in this room. A lot of the great men that I follow are in this room. And I follow great men, one which is in San Francisco and one is with North Cuba down in Miami. And that's what I've been doing all these years. And that's it. And none of that. And so when Owen says to me, thank you for coming up here and doing what I was meant, what I was built to do. You see, God builds us for a certain thing. And it's not to drink and drug and hurt other people. That's how we got sidetracked. Every one of us in here has a beautiful, precious plan of what God has installed in you to do for your life's work. This is my life's work. I'm also studying to go into ministry, and this is what I want to do full time. Ministry doesn't pay too well, so I'm taking my time in studying, but this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do full time. You need to find out what you're going to do full time. But in the meantime, in finding out what you're going to do full time, find out what's in store for you. My friend Jenna that's sitting here in this table right here, I knew her when she had one day of sobriety. Now she's married, happily married to another sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she sponsors tons of girls. That's what we do. Okay, now let me just finish up by saying this. There's nothing so amazing to me as trying to come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous broken and not taking a thorough third step and expecting the whole thing to work. And even though we're on the 12th step, I want to just reiterate real quick so this falls into good soil. I want you to hear this. On page 63 of the Big Book, there's this wonderful prayer. It's called the third step prayer. Doesn't matter which program you're in. If you're 100% NA to the bone, this prayer is still the prayer that you should memorize. If you can't memorize prayers, write it on a card, put it in your shirt pocket. It says, God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over these we may bear witness to those I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. When you're getting all backed up during the day and you feel like you can't go on, you turn it over to God. If you can't remember that prayer, I'm going to give you the simplest prayer, and I didn't tell it to you during this 12-step series because I was waiting till tonight. I didn't want to, and let me tell you something, this is not going to be on the website, so you can't even get this prayer. But you guys that sat through this excruciating 1700 degree weather, right now are going to get the prayer that has helped. Listen, just for self-gratification, I guess, how many people in here have used the prayer that I'm about to tell you and it's worked in their lives? Okay? So I'm going to ask you to just close your eyes. And I'm going to give you a prayer. Just have faith. Just close your eyes. Don't get no nervous. Like, you can't even close your eyes. My sponsor is this Jewish guy from Queens and from Manhattan. And he also teaches in yeshiva. And so I figured he's got this ancient prayer that maybe it was only like in the Talmud, you know, from the back. The back of the things, and I figured he's going to bring it out and he's going to have to translate it from ancient Aramaic and bring it all the way over to me. And he tells me, Steve, I got this prayer, and it works every time. And I figured this is going to be incredible. And I'm listening, and he says, Steve, here's the prayer. God, I go, yes, Jerry. He goes, God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Repeat after me. God, I'm so glad you're with me today. One more time. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Now, listen, I know that that sounds silly, and I know it sounds easy, but let me tell you something. Sometimes I can't come up with the 23rd Psalm. Sometimes I can't do the 7-step prayer. And sometimes I can't do the 11-step prayer and the 3rd-step prayer. Sometimes all I can do in Publix when I'm going in there with my cart and a smell comes over me that reminds me when I was a wino is that all I can say is, God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. And it opens up that channel inside me that's not of me, but is of him. And it gets me out of myself. And sometimes I do that several hundred times. And let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. Over the last 9.5 years, let me tell you how many times it has worked perfectly. 100% of the time over the last 9.5 years. May God bless you and keep you.
Thank you. Okay, we have a nice way of closing.